Thank you for coming. Thank you for coming out. Welcome. My name is Dubs Weinblatt. My pronouns are they, them, theirs. And I am so excited to be here for our seventh season of the Thank You for Coming Out podcast. In 2015, I founded the queer improv show Thank You for Coming Out, or TIFCO as we call it. And it was one of the longest running queer improv shows in New York City. In 2018, our beloved improv show became the podcast it is today, hosted and produced by Gay City News. It is an honor and privilege to hold space for the coming out and coming into self stories our guests share. And I'm so excited for my guest here with me today. It's been a long time coming. We finally made it happen. Travis Greisler is an NYC-based writer, director, acting coach, and newly minted travel agent who began his career as a child actor on Broadway in shows like The Who Is Tommy and Les Miserables. In his adult life, he helped develop a ton of plays and musicals like The Cher Show on Broadway, Fully Committed with Jesse Tyler Ferguson, and Tales of the City with the Scissor Sisters, plus his own work as a writer and director. He continues to coach actors and helps folks dissociate by going on fabulous trips around the globe that he plans as a travel agent. He can be reached via his website, www.travisgreisler.com, or his Instagram, Travisy247, which I will spell and link in all of those things on this post and in the stuff, where he enjoys a healthy posting of comedy, queer content, and the occasional political things too. Travis, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. I am so glad we are finally doing this.
Oh my God, it's been years.
Years. I've been like, years, yeah, plural. Years, yes.
Yes, many years. We did it, and this was our time. This was when it was meant to be.
Well, and also just, it was so wonderful because we just recently did the Craft Your Truth event together. So I think it was a perfect opportunity to remind both of us of like, hi, we need to do this together. But also, wasn't that day just magical? It was magical.
Yes, it was so magical. And for those of you listening who aren't familiar, Craft Your Truth is this event that... me and Travis's mutual friend, Jeffrey Kidwell, and I started in 2018, I think it was when it was. And we bring together teaching artists like Travis to come work with clients from an organization called New Alternatives that supports LGBTQ youth experiencing homelessness. And they like craft art. They craft performance art, and they, you know, they use their stories or their imagination, and then we perform for each other, and it was just it's out of this world every time we do it.
Every single time. And it just, it's, I come away as a teaching artist feeling, I think, equally as empowered and fulfilled as I hope the clients, as we refer to them, are at, like, throughout their day and their experience of sharing their stories with us. And we're just sort of there as like facilitators and liaisons to help bring out, whether it was, oh my gosh, that day we had, there was some poetry, there was some spoken word, there was scene work that happened, and it happens in mere hours. And it's just really beautiful. And I left feeling very proud. I said to both you and Jeffrey, that event makes me feel proud. And I'm so glad you do it around Pride Month, because it's such a perfect like launch into what I want the vibes of that month to be, in addition to obviously all of the celebration and other things that get to occur in June. But I loved it. Thank you for having me again at that as well.
Oh my gosh, of course. And you were at the first ever one in 2018, where it was like a little bit longer. Like, we did a Sunday night, and then we did an all day Monday within a like paid performance at the Magnet Theater. That one was intense, but also amazing.
That one was intense but amazing is exactly how I remember it too, just because we did that full show. The added pressure from a organizer standpoint of putting on the show as quickly as we did, that was like a little bit more fully realized than this most recent one was. I remember just being slightly like, wait, we barely know what these pieces are, let alone how to present them to a paying audience. But it was still wild and incredible. And I just remember the emotions of all of the various people, you know, going through watching those stories and getting to listen to those details. I take both of those events and in the highest regard in my memory bank.
Yes, me too. I'm just thinking about, well, first of all, I'm so grateful for you because as for myself, like as a producer, I'd like to think that I think through all of the things. And something I had not thought through was run of show for the show. And thank God you were there and you were like, what's the run of show? And I was like, huh?
I don't
And
know.
so you sat down with like your notepad or your iPad or something and you curated the entire show. And I was like, thank freaking God for Travis. We can cuss. Thank fucking God for
Yeah.
for
I mean,
Travis.
it's so funny because it's stuff like that that has always come very naturally to me, is how to, in crafting even my truth, crafting an event, an experience for an audience, or something that's going to be consumed in that way. I have a pretty natural inclination to like the ebb and flow of show, a set list, if you will, a playlist, a whatever it might be that is a full run of the gamut experience. And getting to see all of the pieces ahead of time, it was so helpful because I was able to go, oh, okay, we've got some comedy here, we've got story here, we're going to balance that with the poem, we're going to balance, like, and just to really build an evening of entertainment as well. I'm able to do that fast, which is great, but it is the thing that I'm always like, is anybody else paying attention? We should do this, right? Like, it's important. So I was glad to be there to do the thing that actually comes pretty easily to me.
Yeah, that was amazing. Yeah, it was. Yeah, and I'm also just thinking back to like the support, the vibe in the room at the Magnet that night was unmatched, and just
Love.
like yeah, it was full of love and support and joy and connection and just amazing. And I'm thinking about like that night, and also just you know when not just but when we were all sharing the pieces, you know, a few weeks ago. Just the openness and the willingness and the vulnerability of the participants, the clients,
Yeah.
and even and the teaching artists too, of like stepping in when the clients were, you know, too shy to perform. The teaching artists just were like, yep, I got this, and then like did it either with them or on their behalf. And the one that, and what, you know, as I can remember all of them so clearly from both 2018 and this past one in June. And I'm thinking about the one client who wrote, who doesn't know how to read or write, but still wrote their piece, you know, through the
Yep.
teaching artist, and had the whole time had said was going to have the teaching artist perform it on his behalf. And at
Yeah.
the last minute was like, I want to do
I need to
this.
do
And
this.
they went up together, and the teaching artist, Malik, like facilitated the piece through the client. And it was, I couldn't stop crying. It was so beautiful and amazing. I can't.
Because it also it reminds you sometimes our only job is to be a vessel for someone else's story. I mean, that's sort of, I think as artists, you know, because I'm very I've been a theater person basically my entire life, and I think of us as vessels for whatever the other thing is, a vessel for the writer's material, a vessel for to be a proxy for an audience member to see themselves, whatever it might be. We're that transient thing in the middle more often than not, and that's our gift. That's the sort of point to me of all of it, is to both provide that audience the thing that they might be needing, they might not even know they need it, to provide that writer or creator the opportunity, whatever it might be. I'm like, that's the beautiful thing. And what you and Jeffrey have created is really just this phenomenal opportunity that, again, as the creative, I'm like, I have no doubt the participants and clients who are working with us are, I hope, are gaining this like beautiful experience of getting to share something and see their own stories reflected back to them. But I'm like, boy, oh boy, the teaching artists, we are having like emotional cathartic responses that are overwhelming, and make you just go, gosh, I hope Craft Your Truth continues to just grow and bloom in all the ways that you and Jeffrey see it continuing. So, thank you for always having me, but also I can't wait to see where it goes from here.
Yes, thank you. We hope to grow it as well. And I love the thing you just said, the proxy for the audience to see themselves. So important and so necessary. And yeah, those Craft Your Truth days are so special, and we couldn't do it without the teaching artists. So thank you for giving your time and
You
talents also.
tell me when, if I can be there, I'm always there with the bells ringing and a sign to hold up, like whatever you need, I promise.
I believe you, and I appreciate it.
Of course.
So I definitely want to dig into like your career starting from a really young age, but before we get there, we all have multiple coming out stories, we have multiple coming into self stories, and I would love to hear, one or two or however many you want to share with us today.
Yeah, sure. So, okay, like to keep it as condensed and brief, because anyone who knows me knows I'm verbose and can go on at length about things. But I'm from Bucks County, Pennsylvania. I consider myself to be one of the quote unquote lucky ones in that I had very supportive parents in all of the ways. Supportive in when I told them I wanted to be a director at 6 years old, they figured out how to be supportive around that concept. In the same way that when I finally came out to them, they were so supportive of me. But the sort of really quick backstory is I was a child actor. When I told my parents I wanted to be a director at six, there weren't directing classes for 6 year olds in Bucks County, Pennsylvania. So I thought, okay, great, I'll be an actor instead, so I can watch how the directors work. Like acting will be my sneaky way of learning all of the magician's tricks, is sort of how I viewed it at a really young age. And then through it's a much longer story that we don't have to get into, but like through geography and talent and a bunch of other various means, I ended up performing in New York City and in on Broadway. I was in the Radio City Christmas Spectacular, and I was in the Who's Tommy, and all of this was from about ages like 8 through I was pretty solidly performing through about 16, and working professionally. And in doing that, I was exposed really, really young, thank the powers that be, to queer people of all varying types, shapes, sizes, colors, creeds, right? Like I got to know and was so close with so many, especially working in the theater, gay men. And so I ended up thankfully having a lot of role models, and I had a lot of people to look up to. Having said that, I still vividly remember in my teenage puberty years that external pressure from, we'll just say in quotes right now, society, that was so still baked into the 90s in suburbia, from suburban Pennsylvania. And so I felt that yes, I know I will be accepted once I move to New York City as an adult thing. I think that was luckily like baked into my DNA from early on. But my coming out experience was when I was a teenager. I was dating a girl, shout out to Nicole Valerio, who taught me all of my kissing skills. I haven't spoken to Nicole in a gajillion years, and there's no way she will listen to this, but maybe somebody who does can help me get back in touch with her. But Nicole and I were still like dating or seeing each other, whatever teenagers do. And I didn't want to break up with her, but one day my parents, here's like the real God honest truth of the whole thing, is my parents found porn on my computer at home. I had left like some tab open. I must have by mistake. And I was supposed to go and pick up sushi dinner for my family. And my father, right before I'm about to walk out the door, was like, "Hey, We found this on the computer. We should talk about this. Yeah. And I was like, yeah, we totally should. Let me go get the sushi and we'll come back and we'll talk about it over dinner. And I remember having like the full tilt panic attack in the car as I was driving. I'm like, I'm 16 or 17. It's somewhere around there. I think I was 16. And I drove to pick up the food, drove back, and like fully like planned out my and rehearsed in my head my like speech to my parents of what I wanted to say. And because I like wasn't prepared to break up with Nicole, somehow like saying gay felt too extreme at the time. So I did that classic trope. I came home and I was like, Mom, Dad, I think I'm bisexual. I am attracted to men, but I'm also still dating Nicole, and I don't want to stop that because I'm having fun and I don't know what this means yet, blah, blah, blah. And thankfully, my parents were cool about it, or at least as cool as they could be given their set of circumstances. You know, I've heard the horror stories or the more challenging stories. And, you know, my mom wanted to get into that night the delicious intricacies of the kind of men I was attracted to. She was like, she just wanted to know, like, I think for her to start processing, like who her future son-in-law might become, as like those were things she was thinking about. And my father made a joke that I'm pretty sure is a quote from Woody Allen, which is, he goes, well, at least you have something to do on a Saturday night. Oh my God, sorry that my computer is singing at me. My dad going, at least you have something to do on a Saturday night, was so funny, even at the time, that like my very, you know, my cis white, very heteronormative father who liked sports and was accepting of all of my musical theater passions and dreams and had been on Broadway at this point, you know, was still like so open-minded to what was coming. And then it wasn't until I got to college, I went to Northwestern for my undergrad. I came home winter break of freshman year and was like, it's all boys all the time. Sorry, mom and dad. There's no more girls are on the table for me. I definitely I sort of came into my own once I got to college, because I think for many of us, right, going to college was suddenly the blank slate tabula rasa moment of I can become and be anyone who I want here. And so it was the freedom to start exploring and dating, and you know, and I knew what was turning me on and getting me off. So I leaned in and started experimenting really in college. I didn't do much actual like sexual experimentation. I was a bit of a prude in high school, if I'm being honest with myself. But then college became experimentation time and all of that. And I like the phrase, you know, you said this, that there are multiple coming out stories. And so just like the other one that I just wanted to not forget to talk about today, and forgive me for going on and on with you, Dubs, but
You're good.
I had had a long-term boyfriend for a little while in my like early mid-20s, and I was working as a director and all this stuff, and I ended up breaking up with a boyfriend that I had had for, I guess it was just shy of 2 years, and was single and was working on that show that you mentioned in the bio, which was Tales of the City. The Scissor Sisters had written this Tales of the City musical, and Tales of the City is this like huge, famous, you know, coming out book for so many people, as it's all about sort of the queer experience in the 1970s in San Francisco. And the crazy thing was, we were doing the show in San Francisco. And so I got to go out to San Francisco for the first time, and I got to spend a lot of time there. I was there for what amounted to about 6 months out of the year, collectively. I was there back and forth a bunch. And San Francisco became like my second coming out experience. I always say that that city opened up to me in a way that I had not experienced. And I mean that in a dating perspective. I mean that in a sex perspective. I mean that in just even me feeling like I was coming into my own in terms of my own like adult personality as well. And being single in that city, and working on that musical with all the fancy people I was working on that musical with, and like my confidence and all of that, I really felt like I had a second coming out experience while I was there, and came home not an entirely different person, just like a newly shaped person, if that makes sense, and fully turned out. I felt like I was the belle of the ball when I was in San Francisco. Slash, like, and let's just get real. It did for me in whatever that was, 2010, 11, whatever years that were. I felt like San Francisco was just like a town full of tops, and I was just like the happiest little bottom on the planet. My God, I had such a good time. So yeah, those are sort of my initial coming out journeys. Hopefully that all tracked and made sense.
Yes, it did. What are you, a storyteller? What do you craft narratives for a living?
Wild, right?
Thank you for sharing all of that. There's so much that's relatable for a lot of people, and specifically me. I definitely well, I came out as bisexual also because I wasn't ready. I was scared, and we could have a whole other podcast episode of like how bisexuality is real and not a
Yes.
stopover and
Yes.
all of that. And the truth of the matter is, a lot of us did kind of rely on that identity to help us. And so yeah, so that is so real. And also the you said that your mom wanted to get into the delicious intricacies of the men that you were attracted to, which is so funny because my mom, when I came out to her, she started asking me like if I'd ever hooked up with women and like was just went into it. And I was like, I'm not, I can't, I don't, I won't. Like it was way too much. I was like, can you be a little homophobic? Like, can you just like like good, not really, but you know what I mean?
Right. Of course, because there's those extremes with our parents where, right, I think there are so many people who they either have this super homophobic because they don't have the education or the vocab or whatever to be able to talk about it. And then there are those of us with the very accepting parents who just really, where you're like, too much too soon, mom and dad, I'm 16. I don't know what my name is, let alone who I want to be having sex with, let alone telling you any of that. Oh my God, addict, you know?
Yes, w wild.
Wild. But also, like, Dubs, I mean, and forgive me if I haven't gotten to some of these episodes in your podcast, as I'm sure you've talked about this yourself. How many coming outs do you consider yourself having? Because I feel, especially as someone who's trans, like there and like and if you're adding bisexual to the list too, it's got to be a list at this point. Like at least a certain number of fingers worth that you have felt you needed to come out yourself over time. And I feel like that transitions for so many of us queer people, but
Yes, too many to
too
count.
many to count.
Just the different aspects and the different ways that I relate to identities. And I actually was interviewing this author, Alison Cochrane, who writes amazing queer rom-coms. And in that conversation with her, I realized that I'm like on the like demisexual spectrum of like, huh, because we had been talking about like alcohol and sobriety and how a lot of times, especially in the queer community, queer folks, because we're uncomfortable or nervous or facing all of those societal pressures, a lot of us rely on alcohol and drugs to kind of support or as a crutch. And so for me, I was like, talking about how so much of the times that I'd hooked up with people, I'd been under the influence. And then since I stopped drinking, realized that I don't like as easily hook up with people and don't as easily actually when I get down to it. And I was like, so like within that, even that conversation, I was like, I think I actually am demisexual of like, I need to have that connection with someone before I'm ready to have sex with them. So yeah, it's wild just like the opportunities that I get just getting to talk to people and learning about other folks' stories. I learned so much more about myself. And I even have realized too, like I actually think that I am bisexual, pansexual, of like, I think I had it right the first time, but didn't know it because now that I've like come into myself more, I'm like, I actually do find myself attracted to lots of different kinds of people and genders. It's wild.
It is, well, and I love that so much because I think the thing that is so important for me as a queer adult is this acceptance that I'm never a fully baked cookie ever,
Yeah.
right? And I have the absolute autonomy to change my mind as many times as I want, as many different points as I want. That like there's this pressure even within the queer community to like get that label and stick to it. And then I sort of love going, actually, no, tomorrow is a whole other day and I don't know what it brings. And I might feel very differently, in addition to our ever-growing expansive vocabulary. Like there is language that we are using right now that I did not have 10 years ago. I did not have 20 years ago. I'm 40 and I even feel the queer experience continues to itself ebb and flow and unfold for me in ways I was not expecting. Like even you said so beautifully, bisexuality is a very real thing. But back in my college days, like it was the joke, gay by May, right? Like we all like bisexuality was not a thing. It was like any boys who were experimenting with other boys, well, gay by May, good luck. We'll see when that person finally comes out. And it was a joke and a thing that we made fun of. And then one of my I ended up veering into queer studies while I was there because I was so fascinated by all of it and really just bringing validity to all of the colors in our rainbow and all of the various denominations, I guess. And I sort of love it. And there's even been moments, I'm not gonna lie, I do wonder if I was born later and with, even despite all of the horrors that do persist in our country alone, let alone the larger global sphere, I do wonder if I would be more non-binary or more femme presenting if that was something that was available to me in the sort of broader sense that it is, I think, now in terms of social media and the way that younger people are getting exposed to our options and the things that are possible. And I think I spent a lot of time like allowing myself to love my body and my what I've been given. So I spent a lot of time like embracing it and accepting it and loving it. And so all that work made me hesitate in my adult life of going, oh gosh, do I want to start painting my nails more and changing my hair color and like experimenting with all of these things? And I think I would have leaned in harder if things were different earlier, if all of that sort of tracks and makes sense. I think I'm definitely prone to even, I like that gender is this construct that I get to even myself play with. And I still do. Anybody who knows me really well, like there is a closet right over here that's just like filled with caftans. I love a muumuu. I want to like disappear into flowy fabric. I like painting my nails. I've changed my hair color multiple times, right? Like that's the fun of being alive to me is all of the play that we get to do. And I'm theatrically oriented anyway. But I'm like, that's half the joy fest is I do feel like I continue to come out in all of the ways that I experiment with body, self, sexuality. Like sex is only like one corner of it, actually. It's such a small part of sexuality and expression. So yeah, anyway. Get me back on track. I lost the thread, Dubs. Get me back.
You did not lose the thread. You're right on crafting this truth. With this thread of your story. I'm just something that you said struck me, and I'm just trying to like parse it a little bit, where you said, if you would have had this information earlier, or if you were born later, that you would be more non-binary. And I'm wondering, just because we can, I think one of the things that we're taught in this society is that, and we have already said it, like you have to like figure it out. And then you got to be done with it. Wherein, we both know that that's not true. And so I wonder if there's, now I'm your therapist. Like, I wonder if there's like, maybe like a block where it's like you actually can like come into a non-binary self at any
Oh,
age, and
you are not wrong, and I even in hearing that back to myself, and thank you, please therapize me anytime. You're so welcome to. I think that's what we as friends are meant to do for each other, actually. You're not wrong. Right? Like I'm 40 and I could change my mind tomorrow and lean into something if I wanted to. I think part of and maybe I I hope I say it in like the, or at least I'm gonna say it in the way that works for me. I spend a lot of time getting cozy with myself and my expression of self. So like I think I would, if some of these things existed earlier, I would just be so settled into that by now. And so I experiment still in various ways, but I haven't at least currently felt the need to do it in larger strokes or announcing anything in any way, if that makes sense. I spent a lot of time finding and embracing me in all of my delicious flaws and self. So I just think at 40, if things were quote unquote different, I like to look back and go, oh God, I wonder if I would have leaned into that harder in some way. And like instead of being sitting here in front of you in like a traditional, let's be real, probably we would quote unquote find this in like what I'm wearing in the male section of a store, right? I wonder if I would, my closet would be filled with way more unisex and gender non-specific clothing that I would just be in my day-to-day life. And I think part of it is even related to, and I know this is also crazy, but part of this is even related to work life, where because I was trying to be for a really long time a director, which means a like power position in the theater, let's be honest about that too. There are more men than there are women in those fields, or any even non-binary folks. I'm like name a trans or non-binary person who's directing on Broadway, right? Like that doesn't exist yet. I so hope it continues to, and that like that's all the ways that we continue to push forward in the world. But at the time that I was growing up and doing this, all of the quote unquote role models and examples were predominantly men. So to even like present as such, to be in that position of power, to have to sort of unfortunately play the game in the industry, anything that sort of went against the grain was just adding more trouble, if that this all tracks, right? So I think that was the other reason why I very consciously leaned into my maleness. And as a way to just sort of keep going. Now that I'm not working as predominantly since the pandemic, in power positions within the theater, I feel a little bit more freedom, which is actually kind of wonderful. And should I make my way back, I would not hesitate to continue to push the boundaries in even the little ways I was earlier, but I would push them harder, I think, just because boy, oh boy, is it fun to fuck with people and their perceptions of what should and should not be.
Oh, true words. It is so fun to fuck with people in that way. And something else you said struck me. You're striking me a lot, which is I love it. I love it. About, you said like you don't necessarily feel the need to like have these like broad stroke announcements or, and I think that's so I think and know how valid that is. And I also think a lot because it also challenges this idea of like coming out or coming into self, really mostly coming out, is such like a Western, like we have to make this broad announcement and it's this big declaration. And it like goes against my whole, brand. Thank you for coming out. Like I want people to come out. And at the same time, I think part of what I love about the queer community or how I want the queer community to exist, and I don't think we're quite there yet, is the allowance for folks to just be. And if that means an announcement, because some people need that, I'm one of those people. I like to make declarations. It helps me understand myself and the communities that I'm in. Great. If there, and then there needs to be space for people who don't need to say anything to anyone and just live their lives. Like that also is just as valid. We need the space for folks to just try things on, change their name, change it back, change their pronouns, change it back. The gatekeeping that happens within the queer community makes me want to scream. And it's like there's room for it all. There's room. That's what queering spaces is.
Can I get a gay man? Right, like
Yes, Travis.
that's
Yes.
right. Can I get a gay man? Like, it's so funny you
Yes.
bring that up. I am somebody who is interested in culture, and I am very tuned in for the most part. I pray that what the example I'm about to give, I don't get anything quote unquote wrong. But you said that, and immediately made me think of what's going on in culture right now with JoJo Siwa, right? Like JoJo has come out as this sort of queer icon for young people, and then they're now dating a man, if I'm not mistaken, and everybody like their panties, everybody's panties are in a twist over it. And of course, at 40, and with my sort of life experience, I want to look at everyone and go, can we just leave poor JoJo alone? I'm like, A, they're 22 years old. They don't know what they want. They're going to change their mind a lot in the coming years of their existence. And I hope they have the room and the space to change their mind as much as they want to. Because if they want to date a man tomorrow and they want to be with a woman, also that thing too of like, oh, if you're bi or anything, the second you're with one or the other, it cancels out the other side. No, it doesn't, right? Just because they're with a man now doesn't mean that they've stopped being attracted to women, any of those things, right? Or whoever they want to be attracted to. So I really hope we continue to give grace to even our role models, heroes, people who are out in the spotlight and who have way more attention on them. It is truly one of those things. And growing up, I go, "Oh my God, I never wanted to be famous." And thank God for that empowering sort of feeling, because oh, it's terrifying to me. If I was 22 and had all that attention and scrutiny in the comment section, I don't know if I would be as hopefully well-adjusted as I'd like to think I am. It's terrifying to me what people say. I'm like, calm down. I don't even like JoJo Siwa that much. And I'm like, leave her alone. Whatever they want to do,
Yes.
let them do their thing. Who cares?
Yes, gay men.
Gay man.
Okay, so everyone, just so you know, at Craft Your Truth, Travis just out of the blue was like, "Can I get a gay man?" And instead of amen, and I lost it. I was like, "This is the best thing I've ever heard in my entire life, and like it's changed my world." So thank you.
I've
Yes,
been saying it
leave.
for a while. I love it.
It's so good. Okay, everyone, leave JoJo Siwa alone. Like, first of all, it's hard enough to like understand yourself and the intricacies of one's identity generally, and then to do it under the spotlight of millions of people. And it's like, has she said some dumb stuff?
Of
Yes,
course.
we've all said dumb stuff all the time. Like, it's just leave them alone, let them do their thing. I've been following it like kind of, and there's now this
Same.
new there's this like new controversy out of like they did a cover of Bette Davis Eyes and like dressed up as like a quote unquote trad wife, and everyone's like, what are you doing? And they're getting so much heat, and it's like, let them experiment in their freaking identity, let them
Yes.
do that. They're not, I don't think they're hurting anything. I think
Right.
what's hurting is our ability to explore ourselves, our ability to just kind of exist as who, like who
Yes.
we want to be. And it's like, aren't there other things we could be putting our time and attention and focus and energy into? Like,
Do
come
you want
on,
the short
people.
list or the long? My God, there's truly there are horrors and atrocities happening in the world. The last thing anybody needs to be spending any more than a breath on is what JoJo C was doing in a music video, or who they're dating and spending their personal time with. That is honestly none of our damn business. So, right? The advent of the readers at home, I'm holding up my cell phone in this moment. The fact that we have all of human knowledge, but also access to people in a way we never have in our pockets, is both incredible and also horrifying. And I think that pressure on celebrity to, it's like, I'm a just like Jeffrey, I'm a gigantic Beyonce stan. And like, I do kind of love that at the end of the day, she shuts down as much as she possibly can surrounding her personal life and like what's going on in the world. And like, yes, we have access to her and she's got a gajillion followers, but she's curating what we see and what we get to experience. And part of me goes, good for you. We shouldn't have access to all of it, right? Do not give me access to every time you go to the bathroom. I don't need to know. Yeah, I think and that's harder, right? If you add on the element of queerness to that access, and the fact that so much of our culture is about defining and labeling everything, it just removes any of the delicious blurry lines and gray areas, right? Like ultimately what we're talking about too is the removal of nuance in all facets of conversation. Is really challenging because there's always nuance. There's always something more. There's a detail you do not know. We will, no matter how hard we try, as much as we want to live inside of other people's shoes, you cannot fully ever experience what another person is experiencing. So how dare you presume to know or have the opinion on the thing, right? I spent a lot of time, John and I, my partner is John, and my partner John and I both occasionally do like to troll people on the internet in like comment sections when it gets crazy. John is a big trans advocate and he really loves to get into that comment section and defend any of his trans friends, allies, people he cares about deeply. And I do the same thing in regards to the constant critiques on like open relationships and anything that is outside of the traditional heteronormative, you know, way of approaching relationships and things, you know. And I always love when somebody's like coming for somebody's open relationship in a comment section. My reference is always, you commenting on this is the equivalent of this post being about a peanut salad. And then your comment being, well, I'm allergic to peanuts. How do I make this recipe? And the answer is, you don't make the recipe. That recipe is just not for you, right? Like, you don't even need to be in this conversation at all. The peanut thing immediately removed you from the conversation. Why are we here having a debate around the validity of openness and what it does or doesn't do for you? Just everybody's need to slide in and have an opinion lately is really terrifying to me.
Yeah, opinions about everything. And it's like just the number of times where I've read like, like a thread, I was gonna say a tweet, a thread or a comment, and I like want to respond. And I'm like, there's two, like I don't need to be here. It's not my business. I don't care. I don't, what am I doing? I just, and then there are times where I'll type out like 'cause I'm so angry. And I'm like, I actually just needed to type it. I don't need to send it. Like I just need to get it out of my system. And the P just, yeah, it's kind of, there's it's the Wild West out there. No
And the
offense to the
thing you
Wild
just said,
West.
no, of course, please. That thing that you just said about typing it out and not sending it is a technique I feel like I learned as a kid. That was the sometimes you just want to get out the thing that's inside of you, but you don't actually need to share the information once it's out. But it is a cathartic response to type out the thing and not send it. Or back in the day, you know, when we were only handwriting these things out, I would write letters to my bullies when I was younger. I never handed them anything. There was no need to engage in the conversation. But I would go home and I would write out the things I wish I had said. You know, we all have those moments in life where like something bad happens, you know, you get called a slur, a bully goes, you know, it says something terrible to you. You're in a moment of confrontation with somebody, and it's not until hours later when you're replaying it over and over again in your head that you come up with that perfect comeback, or you come up with the exact phrasing of the thing you wish you had said in that moment. I do like the act of writing it or putting it down and giving it its voice still without feeling like it needed to be, you don't need to engage with that response now any further. And I think you're absolutely right. I'm like, get out of the comment section, everybody. It's better for your health. You don't need to be there. You're just screaming into a void. It is not helping anyone. Though sometimes, again, apologies in advance, as I'm not taking my own advice sometimes, and I do end up in those comment sections being like, I'm here to defend my trans friends, and I'm here to talk about why open relationships are none of your business, and don't worry about it. Anyway.
Totally. It's I mean, take your own advice, meaning we all are human beings and we are, we contain multitudes and I'm looking at my Instagram now because after me just saying I don't engage, I definitely engaged here on this post about, I don't know, this person. What the hell? Oh, it was a Chase Strangio. Do you know Chase?
I don't.
He's like the definitely follow them.
Yeah.
He's like the head attorney for the ACLU, and like was
Oh,
like
yes. Wait, I know who you're talking about. My bad. Yep.
And he just posted the other week of like just this like message of support, and like what's happening right now is scary. We're navigating all this really hard stuff, and I'm obviously like paraphrasing in a very terrible way. And so this one person commented about like just whatever it was, just like basically negating what Chase is saying. And this person's not trans. This person does not know what the hell they're talking about. And so I felt really the need to comment. I mean, what I don't need to like read it, but I just like, there's every once in a while where it's like I have to say something because
Yep.
you don't why are you here? You're not, this isn't for
Yeah.
you. This is a
Yep.
room full of peanuts and you have an allergy. Get out. I love that.
That. Right. Doesn't that analogy totally just make sense to me, where I'm always like, not everything is for you, and not everything needs to be, qualified in some way. And like, look, you and I know this, better than most, where I just go, all we're all looking for is our own bodily autonomy and the ability to like live our life. And like, back to the JoJo thing, all of it. If we're not hurting anybody, if there's like really truly no harm occurring, I'm not here to handle your feelings on the matter. Right, your and the feelings are a little bit different to me, right? Like, they might feel like they are offended by something that is very different than actual harm occurring, and so I read that because again, there's nuance, and so I just go, get out. Like, that's what I've never understood. Like, nothing queer people are doing is harming. If anything, boy oh boy, are we making the world a better place by just existing. And all of you would be so dang bored without us. You would. My gosh. One of the true like gifts of being queer, like, and lately in my adult life, when I go to whether it's dancing under a disco ball, to being at an orgy, to wherever I might be where I get to express my queerness, I literally, one of the jokes is, you'll look around and you just go, my God, this queer thing, if it gets out, it's going to go crazy. People are going to go nuts for this stuff because we're just having the best time. To be straight to me in this world lately is the curse, not the other way around. We were all fed that lie, right? Like, that you were going to grow up queer and you were going to be lonely. And I'm like, oh my God, I love it. You couldn't pay me to be straight. What are you talking about? My God, this straight culture is terrifying to me. I am obsessed with queer people. I love that rainbow is our symbol, because I'm like, it's the most colorful, beautiful, like all of the different things. There's not even, we continue to expand our letters in the alphabet. We continue to like all of these things. And I do like saying, I got into like not a fight, an argument the other day at a gay bar with someone who just did not like the word queer, right? They were like, queer means strange and weird and other. And they're like, being gay to me is actually the new normal. It's this normal thing. I don't want to be othered. I don't want, and I went, and I go, I pushed back and I went, not only do I like queer because it's the reclamation of something that was derogatory to us, and I like it as the umbrella term that thankfully, not everybody has to accept it. If we accepted everything, we'd be a monolith. We're not. But I like that for those of us who accept queer as the umbrella term, it is the other. It is the weird thing. We are the strange and unusual. And I'm beaming as I say that to you, because I love being strange and unusual. To be the other, normal and normal to me, and straight and heteronormative, all of those things, I don't want any of it, right? Like, I'm all for gay marriage. I want it to exist. I don't know if I'm ever going to get gay married, right? I'm not sure if that's on my gay agenda. I don't know if, John and I have basically been in an open relationship from pretty much day one. I don't think monogamy is for me now that I've learned this element of myself, right? There are so many things I continue to learn and grow, and I go, gosh, I keep picking the other choice, or like whenever possible, I like the secret menu that's off to the side. I want all of that special stuff. That stuff is delicious. It's more fun. It's more interesting. It at 40 years old, it keeps me going in a way that makes me like go, oh man, there's so much more exciting stuff for me to even learn and discover. And my God, I'm like, queer people are also having way more sex than you straight people. My God. And also, are straight people okay? For any of you, if you're out there and you're straight and you're listening, are you okay? I really do worry about you all a lot. There's a lot going on. Reach out to your fellow straight people and help them out. Become an ally or an accomplice at the very least, and help us because your brethren are in trouble. I'm so worried about all of you.
I mean, you're so right. Are the straight people okay? Have you seen that video with that kid who's like bawling and he's like, I don't he God, now I'm forgetting what it is, but he's like talking about straight people and he's like, I don't want to be with you. Or do you know what
Yeah,
I'm gonna
sure.
find it
Yes,
and I'm gonna text
yes.
it to you.
Yeah,
It's
please
so
do. I
funny.
think I know what you're
It's
talking about. Yeah.
He's like, it's terrible. I don't want you to be okay, whatever. Anyways, okay. So
But
but like in
we're
to our
worried.
point, yeah, we're worried about you. And also I think to our point earlier in the conversation, I love making full circle connections, which is I think that's the beauty of queerness, is that you get to love the rainbow, ever expanding, incredible sex, open relationship, always, going against the grain. And then this person at the bar doesn't want to do any of that and is still part of the queer community, the gay community, for using their language. And that's cool too. It's like, I
Yes.
think that's the point, is like,
Yes.
why can't we all just exist in the ways that we want to, as long as we're not hurting anybody? And just the like limitations that we put on each other is what's hurting us, and it's upsetting.
Yeah, of course. I think ultimately what this person was talking about at that bar is our branding at the end of the day, right? Like in terms of making forward strides in this insane country that we live in, that does not like to look at its own problems and face them anyway, but rather wants to shove them all under a rug, I guess, metaphorically. I get it. I get that sometimes, our branding stuff, I openly admit when we first started changing the pride flag, even I at first, like my gut person instinct was like, wait, what's the change? It doesn't, it's just the rainbow. It's not actually representing. And then the second I opened my eyes a little bit, I went, oh no. Everyone should feel included on that flag. I'm thrilled. I like the redo of it. I actually prefer, back in when it first came out, when we were adding stripes, I was like, okay. I was like, that's a lot going on in the one image. I love where it's the sort of triangle, like almost infiltrating, coming into the existing flag. That's like, I just go, that's just better design. Well done, whoever made that shift and made that change. I was like, it's just a better design than just adding stripes to the list. I like that it feels more active. There's something happening in the image now, which is really exciting to me. Like I even loved during all of Pride Month, you would sit on the subway, and anytime the subway had those animated ads, that arrow, which includes, the trans and the people of color, all it would like swipe across the whole screen, and I was like, yeah, they're in it now, yeah, right? Like it just always feels, it's just more, yeah, active is the word I keep coming to. But yeah, like look, we struggle. I think everybody struggles with branding. I'm like, the Democrats struggle with branding and things, and there's infighting amongst the Democratic Party and liberal and progressive-minded people. That stuff drives me crazy. In the same way that there's infighting and issues around our branding within the queer community. I get it because again, we're not a monolith, and that's why we're gonna always have people who are like, I don't agree with this thing. Now, the ones who can get kicked out are the ones who don't think the T is on the end and part of our alphabet. I'm like, you can get right out. We do not accept you. You are not a part of my queer community. Get the heck out of the club. We don't want you here. And honestly, you conservative, log cabin Republican, whatever. Bye, bitch. But other than that, the rest of you are welcome. If you're here, in still support of everyone being included and fighting for your rights, and you actually know your history, You're welcome to come play with us at all of our fabulous spaces and under all disco balls because we'd love to have you.
Can I get a gay man?
Gay man.
Okay, so I did want to shift gears just for a second because
Course.
I'm really interested to know about like did it so you became an actor to learn about directing, and then you were like swept into the Broadway scene and so few questions. Did you commute back and forth from Bucks County to Broadway every day? You're shaking your head yes. How was that?
I did. So, again, this is the supportive parent shout out moment. If they end up listening to this, and I hope they do. Yeah, my I very quickly started getting cast in stuff in New York. One of the first shows I did, one of the other kids in the show had a manager, and I th after driving my parents crazy, took a meeting with her. She signed me on the spot, and I started performing in the city. And so yeah, at first, depending on the show, we had like a sublet at one point when I was doing the Radio City Christmas Spectacular. But once I started, I got in the Who's Tommy. That was this ongoing Broadway show, and it was running. There was no end in sight when we joined the company. It was you signed 6 month contract. And I joined the company. It was like March of 1994, and by that summer, I had been living in the city during most of that time. And by the summer, I was really missing my friends. I was missing being in my, local public school. And my parents figured out with me, with the principal of my elementary school, how to make it work so that way once the new school year, once my fourth grade year got started, we could start commuting. And became an entire family affair. I'm not kidding. Like one night was my parents, each of my parents. My dad drove me a certain night. My mom drove me a certain night. My grandparents drove me a certain night. And then because the Broadway schedule for Tommy at the time was we did a Friday night, two Saturday, and two Sunday shows. It was a five show weekend. We would drive up to the city together as a family on Fridays. Had an apartment we were subletting from one of the stage managers in the show, a fabulous lesbian named Jill Larmette. And we would sublet because she would go live with her girlfriend at the time and give us her apartment. And we stayed in Soho off of Spring and Thompson at her apartment from Friday night and Saturday night, and then would drive home after the second show on Sunday and then do it all over again the next week. And my principal was even so wonderful that he was like, "Well, do you ever have a day off?" And I was like, "Oh, our show is dark on Tuesdays." He was like, "Don't come to school on Tuesdays." And I had a tutor who would come and work with me on Tuesdays to make sure I wasn't going to ever fall behind. But I only did like 2 hours of tutoring on Tuesdays and then was able to take the rest of the day off to just have like a day off at home because I didn't have a real weekend. So it was a wild, like my fourth grade year was a very unique hybrid of school and Broadway and commuting back and forth with different family members to the city. And my family made it a big thing. And my parents said then, and they still love to tell this, they were like, it was the equivalent to us of if you had had like an away game all the time. They were like, all these parents were like, how are you doing this? And this is crazy. And they're like, well, you drive your kid across three state lines to go to that game and you do all this. They're like, this is what we're doing to help our kid pursue his dreams and what he wants to do. And so they were just so wonderful in that. We made it a family affair. And it became exciting. Like my sister, who's 3 years younger than me, I was in Tommy at 10 years old. So Taryn was like six or seven-ish at the time. And like the ushers in this at the St. James Theater would literally go, "We're gonna take Taryn to allow my mom and my dad to go have a date night." Or the people backstage would let Taryn bring up the curtain at the end of the show so they could clean the stage. Right. Like they just included us. It became a family affair. I have really, really beautiful, wonderful stories and memories of my time in that production in particular. And I've got some like horror stories and stuff just along the way that I'll include in the memoir someday. But for the most part, all of the memories are wonderful. And I was so lucky to have a family that was like, yeah, okay, we're gonna figure this out and make this work. And we always would have like a big family meeting before I signed a contract to talk about like, okay, this is what's coming up. And my parents made a very big deal of like, okay, you gotta keep those grades up. If your grades slip, it's all over. over and we're stopping and you're going back to school like a normal person. But we figured it out and made it work, and it was sort of a magical growing up experience that also I talked to my therapist about plenty of times because it still messed me up in various ways too. But it was a unique childhood.
Yeah, wow, that's wild. And cool. Like,
Yeah,
what
very,
a
it was
unique
very cool.
experience. Yeah. Okay, so are you the Travis Greiser I Googled who was on the Kathy Lee Gifford We Need a Little Christmas special?
That's absolutely a true story.
Okay, so my dad, so Kathy Lee went to the same high school as my dad. She was like maybe 2 years older than my dad, but he had such a crush on her. And so my dad owned his own pharmacy for a long time, and he had a Kathy Lee Gifford wall. And so anytime she was in the newspaper, he clipped it and put it on the wall. He had a mug, he had a t-shirt. And he just like was upset. And actually just came up this past weekend that my mom like doesn't particularly care for Kathy Lee, and we were like, why? And he was like, because your dad had a wall of her in his, and I was like, oh, so it's jealous. It was just so cute, so funny. So was she nice? Tell me what you remember.
Wait, I only have the most lovely things to say about Kathy Lee, actually. So
Great.
I was with a group when I was working as a kid. There was a group of kids known as the Broadway Kids. We recorded albums where it was basically, here are these kids from all these Broadway shows. The first album I wasn't on, the first one was the Broadway Kids Sing Broadway, songs kids sang in Broadway shows. I then did the second album, which was the Broadway Kids Go to the Movies, where it was all the famous songs for kids from, I sang on King of New York from Newsies and things like that. And then the third album was a Christmas album, and Kathy Lee Gifford was the special guest on this album because I was on Regis and Kathy Lee to promote this stuff. So I even was like one of the spokespeople who like talks to Kathy Lee in that episode of television. She asked me like all these fun stories, and then she invited the Broadway Kids to be special guests in her Christmas special. And we were in multiple numbers and all this choreography and rehearsal. And then I just got along with her really, really well. And that's when it's Cody and Cassidy are her kids. And I remember like we spent a lot of time, like not quote unquote babysitting, but like they were much younger than even us. Like we were all like teenagers at the time. And Cody and Cassidy were smaller than us. And we just got to spend a bunch of time, like whenever we weren't on, we would go and just like entertain Cody and Cassidy backstage. And Kathy Lee was lovely. She was lovely to us. She was great in the rehearsal process. She understood working with kids because it's such a very specific thing. You have to have a certain temperament. And I think she just did as a mom, and also just like her whole sort of like ethos as like the way she did work. And she loved theater. I mean, a lot of people don't know. She wrote a Broadway show. It wasn't very successful, unfortunately, but she has a passion for the arts and music and all of that. And so she just thought like the fact that she had a bunch of kids running around her who could sing and dance and act their faces off was thrilling to her. And so she was just so kind to us. And if anything, Regis was the one at the time I remember being like, this doof, he's such a doofy man. Really sweet too, but like Kathy Lee got it and understood like the rehearsal process and how to work with us. And I only have fond memories of Kathy Lee Gifford.
That's so nice.
I love that you pulled that up. The internet is wild and will tell you the darndest things.
Is wild. Okay, so I'm also now looking at the Broadway kids. Is it like, is this what I'm looking at? Like Jesse Eisenberg, Ashley Tisdale, Christy Romano, Lacey Chabert. So you were in it with them.
All those names. We were all friends when we were babies, basically. Yeah, I was a member of the Broadway Kids, I think from like 11 to probably 16 or 17. And I even got to travel some of the globe. Like the Broadway Kids got to go to Italy. We did a whole like Italy tour. So like I got to go to Rome and Positano and Capri when I was like 12, which was wild. And then my gosh, we went all over the country. I mean, I performed at everything from like I did mall shows with the Broadway Kids, or if anybody remembers these Zany Brainies, which was like a store
Yes.
for kids with like
Oh.
games. It was like more about like how to promote
Yes.
imagination and creativity amongst kids. they sold our records, and we would do these pop-up performances in Zany Brainy's, and to the mall shows were insane. Like I have memories of Christy Romano and Christy Carlson Romano, and I knew Lacey a bit, and Eden Regal, who went on to be on All My Children and is a singing voice in The Prince of Egypt, and and obviously, and Jesse Eisenberg, and all these people who have like gone on to like giant acclaim and fame. We were all just kids together, either in a recording studio or in a mall courtyard, singing to the Oliver or Annie medleys and doing like the dumbest choreo you've ever seen, and belting our faces off in bad t-shirts that had our logo on it. Just crazy, crazy stuff that I did as a kid. Yeah.
Okay, well, I love that, and God, I wish I would have asked you about it earlier so we could keep talking about it, because I'm so interested and intrigued.
That's a whole other podcast.
I will quickly say and or ask: do you watch the show Special Forces, or have you heard
No,
of
what
it
special?
on
No, what
Fox?
special forces?
I'm pretty sure that's what it's called. So it's like a reality show on Fox, and it's like C and D list celebrities like sign up to like do military training. And
Wow.
Christy Ren Stevens, as I know her,
Of course.
is on it. JoJo Siwa is on it. There's like three or four
Okay.
seasons now. I don't know if they're on the same season. Kate from John and Kate plus eight. Like it, this
Oh,
show
sure.
is
Wild.
bonkers, and it's
Yeah.
wild beyond your just imagination. If you need something to be like, what the literal hell, watch that.
Watch that.
Because
Yeah,
it is.
Christy and I slide into each other's DMs every so often. So like we're still like kind of in touch. Honestly, that's some of the things that I do love about social media is that I've been able to stay in touch with some of these people. Like Jesse Eisenberg, if he even remembered me, would be wild that we spent a lot of time together when we were teenagers. But like Christy and I talk, and like it's always so fun because these people who have gone on to do, are at a different level than I am in terms of quote unquote success, though, like whatever. It's been really nice to still be able to stay in touch and like swap stories and recount these things. Like I have some of the funniest stories about Christy that I will save for another podcast. But yeah, I absolutely need to go and find her episode or episodes of this show because I'm sure she did insane stuff. I adore Christy.
Yeah, there was okay, so there was she, I don't want to okay. There was one, well, so I ate an edible, so I was a little stoned, and we're
Love.
watching, and she was like, I mean, these people are under stress. These are really scary things that they're being asked to do. And she just like the like one of the like leaders of it or whatever was like, and when you get to point X, like let go with your arms. And she was like, what arms? These
What?
arms?
Yeah.
And he was like, what other arms? What
What
are we
other
talking
arms
about?
are there?
And I lost it because I was just I rewound it like 16 times. I was like, this is so funny. Because
I'm
like
obsessed.
it, as I'm sitting there on the comfort of my couch, not like 600 feet in the air, dangling from it with a string. But it's
I would like to think that I'm like a bit of a thrill seeker, and I definitely like that kind of stuff. Those environments, though, I think I would have a panic attack. Like
yeah,
that's the
well,
kind of
because
stuff.
they also yeah, sorry, I didn't
Oh,
mean to cut you
please.
off.
No, please. Because like John's family are like he has a lot of Navy SEALs in his family, and so his like nephew just finished all of his like major like SEAL training, and I got to hear about like the number of times they've just like basically pushed him out of an airplane, and like it's wild what they do. And as I've gotten older, I'm a little bit, I think, more protective of like my body, where I'm like, I don't know. I used to say I wanted to do all these things, and I don't know if I would anymore. I think I would say something like, "What arms under that insane high pressure too,
Yes.
because like I don't wait what it with my feet, what are feet, are these my feet, like I don't anyway." Yeah,
Yeah,
bonkers.
it was bonkers. Yeah, because they're also like yelling at you
Of
and
course.
they're demeaning you and also condescending, and you're being filmed and you're like, okay, millions of people are going to watch me do this. You know, in at least in, Navy SEAL training, no one's it's not being aired. Like
No,
it's
right. There's no like
private.
final broadcast, right? My God, that extra element of the cameras is truly wild. I mean, of course, that ultimately you're like, that's great TV, and that's why there's multiple seasons and Christie's on the show. But yeah, that is crazy. I have to look that up. That will blow my
Yeah.
mind. Uh-huh.
Yes. Okay. I just looked at the clock and we have been gabbing, which is has been amazing.
Of
And
course.
I have to be respectful of everyone's time. So I'm gonna move us into our lightning round of questions.
You got it.
Just meant to be fun, lighthearted. They are open-ended, so it does make it slightly more challenging, but
We'll
this is gonna be
figure it
fun.
out.
We'll figure it
Great.
out. All right. Where's your favorite place to think?
Oh, great question. The shower. Yeah, I'm a shower thinker. Like once you go through that like body, like I don't realize I'm doing the routine that I do of like, and I'm a top down girly, meaning like
Me
I
too.
start with the shampoo and then like I make my then I do my face and like I'm a top down person, but I've done it, almost every day for my 40 years of existence. So I'm so used to it that I'm then able to, I guess, disassociate and I'm like solving either my own problems of the day, creative work, whatever, the shower is like my favorite mental release place.
Yeah, it's great. My brother got me like a pad of paper to like suction in the shower to like for your ideas. And I was like, but what pen?
Right.
Like
I was
it's
going
like
to say, I was like, how am I without getting it wet? I need like a digital something. The idea
yeah.
of a shower notebook is such a good idea, though, to me now. I'm like, how have I never thought of that? Because I'm usually yelling at Siri to like do something for me while I'm doing that instead. That's a great idea.
I think it's like, yeah, the paper. I don't know. I'll find it and show you. Okay. Who is an
Please.
influential queer person in your life?
Oh, do you want that to be somebody who I actually am in connection with, or like as in like a somebody I look up to and find inspiring?
However you interpret the question.
I'm just gonna go with what like was my first instinct, and I hope that in sharing this person's info, it maybe spreads their love a little bit. Do you know who Taylor Mack is?
The name sounds familiar.
So, okay, I'll try to keep this brief, I promise. Taylor Mack is a performance artist. Drag is not the right word to talk about how they present themselves. Taylor's preferred pronouns are Judy. Taylor did their most famous show was a piece that I am lucky to be one of the 750 audience members for, which was a piece called The 24-Decade History of Popular Music. I showed up at St. Anne's Warehouse on a Saturday at noon, and I did not leave until noon on Sunday and watched 24 hours of performance. Taylor never really left the stage, changed costume every hour. Every hour was basically from 1776, a decade of music, all of the popular music of our country. And the thesis statement was through the popular music, how we became the country we became, whether that's the racist, homophobic element that were introduced in music or the rebellion of those very things. And it's one of the most incredible pieces of art I've ever experienced in my life and live performances I've ever been to. And I like that Taylor is a and by the way, for those listening at home, there is a phenomenal documentary that is available on HBO Max, whatever they're called. I'm like, can we dead name Max? Like, what is, I don't know what to call them anymore. I think it's now HBO, I think it's HBO Max
I
again.
mean, yeah.
Right. So on HBO Max, it is called 24 Decade History of Popular Music. It's a less than 2 hour version that it condenses down and is a documentary about the making of and all this. I try to watch it every Pride Month. So once a year, I at least pull this out. It is so thrilling to see the costumes and the magic, but also it just reminds me how being queer is this beautiful, magical thing. And I just think Taylor is an incredible artist that I always sort of am in awe of.
I love. Definitely will need to check Judy out.
Please, yeah.
Okay. So this is a lightning round. So answer as
Okay.
quick as possible. You got
Okay.
this. Okay. And so with that said, I do want to hear the context. So
Sure,
maybe
go faster.
I'll email go faster and I'll email you the questions if you want to elaborate more, we can add it in the
Sure thing.
Okay. A song that you can listen to on repeat forever.
The Origin of Love from Hedwig and the Angry Inch.
What's one thing you want to be known for?
Oh, what a wonderful question. I think my energy, enthusiasm for helping people and making the world a little bit of a better place.
And I believe that that's true. What does identity euphoria feel like to you?
Oh, just being so comfortable in, I'm pointing to my head. My identity euphoria comes when I am happy to swirl around with all of the voices in there as often as possible.
Heck yeah. Where do you find joy?
With other queer people. That is lately my joy on a dance floor in creative spaces like Craft Your Truth, surrounded by other cool queer people who like want to just do awesome, cool, queer things. That's where I'm most joyous.
All right, last question. Bagels or donuts?
How very dare you?
I know.
Oh my God. The Jews are gonna be so mad at me. It's donuts for me lately. It really is. I love, there's some donut spots in New York that I've been exposed to recently that I'm like gagged over.
Like, what are they?
Okay, Bear Donut is on 31st and I want to say like 7th Broadway. It's like near the Penn Station area. They have a scallion cream cheese donut that made my head explode. Wild. So, which is the
Okay.
perfect version of all of the worlds, right? Because it's like a bagel, but it's sweeter and it's a donut. Obsessed.
I love that. Travis, this has been so much fun and just the best. I'm so glad we finally did this. Thank you so much for joining me, for sharing. Thank you for coming out.
Dubs, thank you for having me. Thank you for providing this fabulous space and opportunity. And I hope you and your editor are able to boil this down to something that's exciting to listen to. And thanks to everyone for checking this out and listening and supporting at home. But I love you, Dubs. Thanks for having me.
Love you.
Thank you for coming out.